Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 11, chapter 23, text number 1. The Song of the Avanti Brahmana. Shri Badarayane Ruvacha. Sa Ivam Samsita Buddhavena. Bhagavad Mukhina Darshaha Mukhya. Sabhaji Amritcha Vacho Mukundas. Tamma Babase Savaniha Virya. Shri Vidarayana Ruvacha. Shri Sukadeva Goswami said. Saha he evam thus samsitaha respectfully requested Uddhavena by Uddhava Bhagavat of the devotees Mukhena by the greatest Dasaha of the dynasty of Dasaha the Yadus, Mukyaha, the chief, Sabhajayhan, praising, Vritcha, of his servant, Vachaha, the words, Mukundaha, Lord Mukunda, Krishna, Tam, to him, Ababase, began to speak, Shavaniya, most worthy of hearing about. Vidyaha, whose omnipotency. Is this water from the hot water tap?
Yeah.
We shouldn't drink water from hot water taps. Warm water is good, but not from hot water taps. Because it has all sorts of extra ingredients because of the hot water goes through the copper pipes and the cylinders and what have you. So if you drink hot water from the hot water tap, it's actually poisons your system. So we shouldn't drink that. So if a speaker wants warm water, we should warm it up, but not from the hot water tap. So if it's not going to be warmed up, then it's better cold. The other day I got some water, I looked at it and it was actually very cloudy. I took a sip and then I think you might have seen it as well, you replaced it, which was good. But, generally probably shouldn't give the speaker water from a hot water tap. No one should really drink water from a hot water tap. So here Sukadeva Goswami Sukadeva Goswami said, Lord Mukunda, the chief of the Dasahas, having been respectfully requested by the best of his devotees, Sri Uddhava, first acknowledged the fitness of his servant statements. Then the Lord, whose glorious exploits are most worthy of being heard, began to reply to him. So here in the beginning of this chapter, the song of the Avanti Brahmana. So this chapter, of course, leads on from the previous chapter, and we see that Lord Sri Krishna's statements in the previous chapter. Let's see who remembers. Who can summarize Lord Krishna's statements at the end of the previous chapter? What was his It was a message, the main message that he is giving to Uddhava, that led into this chapter, that led Uddhava to ask another question. Tolerate, yes, yeah, not give way to anger and intolerance. And lack of forgiveness, yeah. Of course, just before that, Krishna said to Uddhava that do not try to enjoy sense gratification with the material senses, and see how illusion based on material dualities prevents one from realizing the self. First of all, Krishna is explaining that one should avoid trying to live in the material world and trying to enjoy the objects, the senses through material objects. So that's what Krishna is saying, because it presents stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So then the next statement is coupled with that, that even though neglected, insulted, ridiculed or envied by bad men, or even though repeatedly agitated or being beaten, tied up or deprived of one's occupation, spat upon or polluted with urine by ignorant people, one who desires the highest goal in life should, in spite of all these difficulties, use his intelligence to keep himself safe on the spiritual platform. So, the reason, of course, Krishna is saying that is that if people follow the Lord's instructions, follow a path of virtue, austerity, religiousness, then what happens is that they're turning the backs on the process of sense gratification for themselves and others. And of course, what happens is when sense gratification becomes somehow obstructed, people become angry. So therefore he's saying that even if, you know, if you're following what is correct and people become angry, you know, very angry, we see here some of the things that people are likely to do. He said, still, you should follow this principle. So important it is. Of course, that means that certainly one should not be swayed by others' intolerance that somehow sense gratification is being preached against or thwarted, but certainly one should also not become angry oneself. Also, one should also not become subject to the same faults. Here, such as, you know, here it's saying that even if though neglected, we see the prayer of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Asri Shava Parada Tambanasta Mamma Dasanam Mamma Tamkarotava, Yitapata Vavitur Lampatoma Pranatas to save enough for the heart. I am my Lord, I know him but Krishna is my Lord, and he shall remain so even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me broken hearted by not being present before me. So even if it appears that the devotee is being neglected by the Lord himself, still one should also not, you know, therefore say, you know, my sense gratification or my material desires are not sufficiently being fulfilled, and one may also become subject to the same anger at that. So, therefore, now, Uddhava, we see in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, these same principles that are explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that first of all, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 16, Krishna says, Nasato vijite bhavo nabhavo vijite siddhaha uvayarapi dushto natastana tatvadvalishvi. But those who are seers of the truth have concluded of the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance, and of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. This they have concluded by studying the nature of both. So therefore, you know, as Krishna explained in the previous chapter, we should be aware of that which is sat, or actually truth, and that which is asat, or that which is illusion, based on dualities. That which is actually truth is eternal. But when we become involved in sense gratification, we become subjected to asat, or that which actually has no existence. It's a world of dualities, and therefore, you know, happiness does not actually exist in its own pure right in the world of sense gratification, because there's dualities. There's no absolute platform of real happiness. You know, as soon as you try to grab a hold of that happiness, attain it, disappears, because it's a world of dualities. What you find is, oh, there's so much distress here. So there's sat and asat. So engaging in sense gratification, one actually just comes in contact with the asat, or that which doesn't actually exist in the world of dualities. And the other verse, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, confirming the stumbling blocks that one should not come under the sway of, is in the third chapter, text 34, where Krishna is explaining the very same principle. He says, Indriyas Indriyas Yate Ragavasho Vivastito Tayonavasam Magatit Tohyasya Paripantano. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. So, you know, the principles of religion, they regulate so that we're not acting just according to attachment to sense gratification or aversion to those things which spoil our sense gratification. And one should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion, because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So these things have been explained previously by Krishna. So then Uddhava, he asked Lord Sri Krishna, or best of all speakers, please explain to me how I may properly understand this. And then he makes a statement in the final verse of the 22nd chapter. It says, O soul of the universe, the conditioning of one's personality in material life is very strong, and therefore it is very difficult even for learned men to tolerate the offences committed against them by ignorant people. Only your devotees who are fixed in your loving service and who have achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet are able to tolerate such offences. So Krishna has given an instruction, but Uddhava is saying that in order to, you know, further understand or expand the subject, you know, what you're saying is correct, but what we see is that even very learned people cannot actually follow that. So, you know, can you explain, you know, why is it that they cannot follow? And yet we see that only your devotees can actually, you know, give up sense gratification, and also, even though being harassed because of that, and because of preaching against that sense gratification, they never sway from the path of virtue. So how is that? How is it they can be successful and even other very learned men cannot? So there's some further understanding. And that leads us, of course, to this verse here today, where Sukadeva Goswami says that Lord Mukunda, the chief of the Dasahas, having thus been respectfully requested by the best of these devotees, Sri Uddhava, first acknowledged the fitness of his statements, his servant's statements. Then the Lord, whose glorious exploits are most worthy of being heard, began to reply to him. So, Krishna states that what Uddhava has said is very reasonable. He's acknowledging that Uddhava is asking a question because there is something further to be understood about Lord Krishna's statements. In other words, Krishna is saying that you are not just offering a challenge, that I'm saying give up sense gratification and you're finding some reason why you shouldn't. Generally that's the case, right? That if someone says you shouldn't do this, it's wrong, and the person is thinking, no, but that's my sense gratification, so then they will ask a question, but their question is actually a challenge. Now you see that, and sometimes we see in Srila Prabhupada's he would give lectures. I was listening to one the other day. He was in India. South Africa. And he was speaking, of course there was a lot of Indian community there. But he did get a few challenges after the class, but he was saying the same thing. He was speaking from Lord Rishabhdev, how one should not live like hogs, dogs, camels and asses, but should practice austerity and achieve success in life by coming to the spiritual platform. So someone asked, a question, which is actually a challenge. There's a statement and a challenge in the question, but it's unreasonable. What would happen if everyone follows this? Starts chanting Hare Krishna, and everyone is giving up the path of sense gratification, and people are leaving their families, and so many things like this. It was a question, but it was actually a challenge. That you're telling me to give up sense gratification, I'm not going to have anything to do with that. So it wasn't the same. So Krishna is distinguishing. The Uddhava's question is quite reasonable, and his statement is quite reasonable. It's not like that sort of a question. Prabhupada, of course, answered that, we're not asking anyone to leave their family. And he said, I never said that. So why are you saying it? Why are you saying I said it? Because I never said it. So that's unreasonable. In fact, I said the opposite, that you can stay within your position and just chant Hare Krishna. So it's an unreasonable statement, basically brought about by his anger. And then Srila Prabhupada said, but you don't have to worry. Don't be worried, because only a few intelligent people will take up this process and go back to Godhead, and the rest will stay here anyway in the material world and suffer. So you don't have to worry. Don't be alarmed. Like this. This is very instructive, of course, and we learn so much from those who are actually devotees, that in spiritual life we should always, it's not that we should not inquire and question, and it's not that we don't have doubts, and it's not that just because an authority makes a statement, that in a mood of humility that we just accept that and never question any further. You know, it's not that we blindly follow. You know, if there's something that needs further understanding, then, you know, we question and we ask. And that is, you know, that is within the realms of humility. That is proper. In fact, it's wanted. It's required. And Krishna asks in the Bhagavad Gita that you must question. But it must be with, you know, not in this challenging mood, but in a submissive mood that you actually want to hear. So Srila Prabhupada actually said in that lecture, he said, these questions are useless. You know, there's no value. He understood they're asking questions, but they're not asking a question, how do I advance in spiritual life? They're asking the question, how can I remain fixed in sense gratification? So, in this way, what was he manifesting here? Neglecting. So he's neglecting the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. Ridiculing. You know, you coming here and proposing some preposterous, you know, what if everyone chants Hare Krishna? How ridiculous. Yeah, so there is neglect, ridicule, insults. And of course we see in some countries, you know, when the devotees used to preach in Russia, that they were, you know, beaten. I think some were killed. And even in America, and I think some cases in Australia, they used to have the deprogrammers. And, you know, they would kidnap a devotee and subject them to all sorts of torture, ridicule, humiliation, and, you know, force them to, you know, break all the regular principles and, you know, and you know, inflict violence like that. So, because the principle is that Krishna is asking, you know, don't get involved in sense gratification, and that will make people angry. But you should remain fixed in the principles of this. So Uddhava, he's not challenging, but still, you know, something more needs to be said, because we see that many people cannot follow this, and therefore they'll reject that instruction. Even very, very learned persons cannot be successful in giving up sense gratification, and when people, you know, show opposition to, you know, the whole process of austerity and trying for spiritual liberation, they succumb to that and give up their process as well. So, another interesting point, of course, from this verse is that Sukadeva Goswami addresses, he says that, the same point really, that, you know, Sukadeva Goswami, having been respectfully requested by the best of his devotees. So, Sukadeva Goswami pointing out that now Uddhava is asking the question, how, you know, how can we follow your instructions and come to this point of spiritual perfection, which is very difficult even for the learned. But somehow your devotees are able to do that. How have they done that? Explain that to me. How do they always remain humble and, you know, fixed? They remain. Of course, humility has four principles. And actually, Uddhava is manifesting that he is already a great devotee who's achieved the success that he's asking about. So he's asking that, you know, there, how do they remain fixed in humility, pridelessness, respectfulness, tolerance? But we see that Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out, well, he already has these qualities. And it also describes, Sukadeva Goswami describes that He is Bhagavat Mukhina. He's the best of devotees. So in other words, Sukadeva Goswami is saying that Uddhava, he's not making this inquiry actually because he's a conditioned soul. He's actually the best of the devotees, and the very perfection he's inquiring about, he already has that humility, and he's practicing it right there, with Lord Sri Krishna. So we understand, of course, that Krishna is giving us instructions, and those instructions, in order to give us instructions, he manifests many different pastimes with his devotees, and he puts his devotees in all sorts of situations where they are able to practice the correct principles of virtue according to the time, place and circumstance. And also, when they're in dilemmas that we face, we learn from them what are the questions that we need to ask at that time, and how do we ask those questions, and who do we ask. So we should understand from Uddhava that we're actually meant to learn from him, because he's already a perfected being. But the situation he's in, just as many devotees who are inquiring or apparently appearing to be lacking knowledge or disturbed or facing some dilemma, we should not make the mistake. The mistake is, of course, we think, well, this devotee in relationship with Krishna, and even Krishna himself, look at the problem they're in and they're trying to resolve it. So this means that they're also conditioned by the same laws of karma. So, why follow them? Because they're on the same platform as me. The problems that I'm facing, we see the Pandavas, they face the same problems. But why follow them? Because, they got themselves into the same difficulty I got myself into. So they're on the same platform. Why should I accept them as superior? Look at the difficulties. But actually, Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out that that's not the case. These are perfected beings. They're already on the exalted platform of the very perfection that they appear to be trying to achieve. They're just showing us the process of how to achieve that perfection. They're not really trying to achieve it themselves, in one sense. That perfection is already there. So therefore, we see here also that Lord Sri Krishna is described as Shravaniya Viryaha. That's one whose glorious exploits are most worthy of being heard, and he's also described as Lord Mukunda. So, one may question that how is it that Krishna appears to be similar to us, therefore why should we follow him? He's giving these instructions, you give up sense gratification. Now why should I follow you? Because you appear to be just one of us. Therefore Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out, no, he is Mukunda. He's the giver of liberation. He appears to be one of us, but he knows the path of liberation. He knows the path of virtue, and by giving us that path, you achieve liberation. So he's Mukunda. He's not an ordinary person. And one may question that, and he's saying, but his activities are glorious. All his activities confirm that. We see that if you actually examine the activities of Krishna, you see that he's completely transcendental. Although he's manifesting human-like pastimes, actually all of his activities are completely transcendental. And therefore he should not be doubted. And all of Krishna's activities are actually enacted with his devotees. And therefore the activities of Krishna and his devotees are all transcendental. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami, of course, is pointing out that here, you know, these instructions given by Krishna and you know, being expanded upon through questions and answers, through Uddhava, and through the devotional service practiced by Sri Uddhava, we should not see them as ordinary persons trying to find fault in them so that we can give up the difficult path that they're presenting. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada, you know, when he came to the Western world, and you know, he said that when he arrived here, and he thought, when I have to tell, you know, these people who are absorbed in sense gratification that you have to, you know, give up illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating, which is the very basis of their existence, he said, they'll just tell me to go away. That's what he thought. That they'll just be angry and say, just go back. Go back to where you come from. And of course, in many places, you know, some did. You know, what are you doing coming here and telling us that we should, you know, give up these things, which are the very basis of, you know, happiness and success. You know, you eat lots of meat, you become, you know, healthy and strong. You become healthy and strong, you become able to work very hard, you work very hard. You get lots of wealth, you get lots of wealth, you have lots of sense gratification, you become happy. And where is the problem? Srila Prabhupada was saying, well, you know, the fault is that because you're involved in impious activities, the result is not happiness but suffering. There's some temporary gain of happiness, and then in the long run you're ruined by your impiety and animalistic qualities. Therefore, you know, there's actually a very nice example here with because Krishna is showing he's in order to demonstrate how a devotee becomes successful by being tolerant and humble, respectful, prideless, he's giving this nice story of the Avanti Brahmana. There's also probably more commonly known is the pastime in the Mahabharata of the Pandavas. We know that Maharaj Yudhisthira, of course, was the you know, known as Dharmaraj, or one who is virtue personified. And it's a very intriguing story because it really represents this point here that he was following the principles of being respectful to superiors, being humble, prideless, and always following the principles of truth, religion, piety, never being involved in, you know, sinful activities and what have you. So of course, whereas his you know, Yuridan, so the cousins, he was following a path of sinfulness, pride, you know, unforgiving qualities, greed. And so what happened was Duryodhana's party, they you know, come up with the plan how they could take away everything that the Pandavas had, even though they had their own kingdom, but you know, we would take everything that they had. And so they had this gambling match. Now, Yudhisthira, of course, was very pious, and he was averse to any vices. It's not among the Kshatriyas, they would gamble occasionally, but many sadhus used to visit the various Kshatriyas and would, you know, instruct them. Although these things are there for Kshatriyas, do not succumb to these vices, because it will cause your ruination. So although Kshatriyas, they would gamble, you know, in a challenge, it was part of their challenging nature, but it should not become an all-consuming vice, as it was with Duryodhana. For Maharaj Yudhisthira, it was not like that. You know, he was always acting virtuously and piously. But if there was a challenge, he would accept it. But even if that challenge was there, he may not necessarily go very far with it and try and find some way to, you know, avoid it becoming excessive. But what happened in this circumstance is that Dhritarashtra, who was condoning his son's activities, he conspired that if the elders are present and they personally request Yudhisthira to come, then because of his virtuous nature, he will actually follow the orders of his superiors. He will not be arrogant or disrespectful. That if they're asking and they're saying, oh, you know, a harmful challenge, come, you know, come and enjoy with this, that he will accept. So that is what happened. He would never insult or offend his superiors. So he was following that principle. Yudhisthira had no thought in his mind, oh, I can't, you know, I can't wait for the next gambling match, and I'm just addicted to gambling, not like the gamblers of today that, you know, they'll sit there all day, every day, and just keep throwing in, you know, the family's hard-earned wealth, you know, which has been built up over many generations, and they just, you know, they're just addicted, all consumed, you know, by this gambling fever. So, but still, and eating meat, that sometimes the Kshatriyas, they would actually go into the forest, and they would kill wild animals to, allow the rishis to, feel safe and protected. So, you know, they wouldn't kill them all, but they would keep them controlled. Sometimes, not all, but some Kshatriyas may even eat some meat from, on occasion. Srila Prabhupada mentions that sometimes people say, oh, you know, the Pandavas ate meat, so, you know, why can't I? Because, you know, well, you're not a Kshatriya, for one. And as Prabhupada points out, actually not all the Pandavas ate meat. Bhima may have sometimes, occasionally, very, you know, rarely. It's not like, you know, every day we have a steak for dinner. Oh yeah, well, Bhima ate meat. You know, I'm going to eat meat, you know, every day, all day, three meals a day for the rest of my life. Because Bhima, you know, once or twice in his life sampled some meat, you know, in his Kshatriya duties. And therefore, as far as I'm concerned, you know, all the Pandavas are meat eaters, and so am I. So, but still, even though, you know, those concessions may be there for the Kshatriyas, the Rishis would, you know, be careful. It doesn't become a vice. You know, it's acceptable, but be wary. Sex life, the Kshatriyas, of course, because of their wealth, their strength, they could maintain many wives. Many children, and but again, they should not come under the control of just always being absorbed in sex life. Intoxication, you know, on some ceremonial occasions and different functions, occasionally, rarely, some Kshatriyas may have some, you know, intoxicating beverage. It's not that, you know, every day they're drinking, you know, a dozen stubbies. But But still, even though these concessions are there for Kshatriyas, not for everyone, the Brahmins and what have you, they're still advised, don't let it become a vice. You know, there's concession, but don't let it become a vice. And of course, Yudhisthira didn't. But he was felt obliged that, you know, my superiors have ordered me to come here, and he even protested to some degree, I don't really want to get involved, this may not lead, you know, this could be dangerous. But no, he was obliged. And then as the gambling match went on, and he was, obliged to continue, he kept waiting for his superiors, someone say this is wrong and allow me to stop. But your silence means that you're condoning it, and therefore I have to continue. So Yudhisthira continued, and of course he lost everything. His kingdom, his wife, his brothers, himself, his clothes, such as, gambling. So therefore, they were banished to the forest. And so Yudhisthira was living in the forest. 13 years they had to live there, and then the last year of their ordeal, they had to live incognito. If anyone saw them, they would have to go through another 13 years, and this could go on for the rest of their life. So, when they were in the forest, they would stay with the various hermitages of brahmanas, and so many great sages used to come and visit them, and they would also go to their hermitages, you know. Srila Vyasadeva would come and visit, Maitreya Muni, Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi, has been existing, living, since the beginning of creation. He still looks like a 16-year-old boy. And yet, such a great sadhu. So he's coming to visit, telling them different stories. And they were performing so many ceremonies with the brahmanas and studying the scriptures. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he was actually enjoying himself. And he was very peaceful. He was very happy, very peaceful. He is just like nectar for him. But Draupadi was still, she was very sorrowful. For her, she could not shake off the hurt and the sorrow and the humiliation at the hands of Duryodhana, who had forced her to be dragged into the assembly. She was off the altar, of course, and therefore her clothes were, soiled with blood. She just had one simple cloth on. She was not dressed properly. She was not expecting to come into public. And she was dragged by her hair into the assembly in that state. And of course, even though, she was there in the presence of her husbands, who were great warriors, no one was able to help her, of course, except Krishna. She prayed to Krishna when they tried to strip Draupadi naked. She prayed to, first she was hanging on, of course, to the cloth with one hand, but when she realized, all these kshatriyas, pulling at the cloth, I'm not going to be able to stop them. She, both hands, she prayed to Krishna, you help me. So, of course, Krishna, Draupadi was very dear to Krishna. One time when Draupadi and Krishna had come to visit them, Krishna was actually paring a piece of fruit. And when he was paring that piece of fruit, there's a little nick on the finger, you know, sometimes just a little nick and it bleeds, you know, profusely, like this. And Draupadi immediately tore off a piece of her cloth and wrapped it around Krishna's finger. So, you know, Krishna's very pleased, and he sort of blessed her that, you know, I will repay that favour, you know. So, of course, Krishna did, and he supplied her unlimited cloth. But, you know, she was very, it was a very traumatic experience. So, you know, she's saying to Yudhisthira, you know, as she's remembering it, she starts to get really angry. And she's saying to Yudhisthira, how can you be so peaceful? You know, why are you not angry? You know? So, you know, which is very unusual for Draupadi to actually, you know, manifest anger in front of her husband. It was extremely, you know, she was so disturbed that. Draupadi was so chaste that she was the first one up in the morning and would immediately, you know, tend to her five husbands' needs, and she was the last one to take rest. And she's just so chaste and so devoted to her husbands like that. So for her to manifest this anger, you can see how much grief, how she was suffering. And to see Yudhisthira enjoying himself in the forest, you know. So, you know, she questioned, you know, have you lost your discrimination? So now she's, you know, here we see, just like Krishna was saying, you know, in the previous verse, that even someone, you know, you're following the path of what is right, that which is pleasing to the Lord. Here we see that even the most chaste Draupadi, what to speak of, is challenging, you know, insulting. You lost your discrimination, that you don't take up arms as a Kshatriya and immediately go and, you know, defend. And, you know, why are you so forgiving? So, of course, Yudhisthira explained that, you know, this principle of virtue, of which forgiveness is considered, you know, this humility, forgiveness, tolerance is considered the highest of qualities of those seeking virtue. It is actually, you know, it's not to be given up. One should not become, you know, give up one's virtue in order to get some temporary gain, which, because one has acted impiously, will ultimately lead to one's ruin. And, you know, he described in many ways that, you know, people who become angry, that, you know, they become unforgiving and disrespectful and lack humility. With that anger, there's nothing they won't do or say. You've seen, you know, an angry person who's just, you know, whatever comes, anyone who's ever been, you know, subject to an angry outburst, you know. So there's nothing that will not be said or done, broken, you know, no, you know, nothing is sacred, you know, everything's up for grabs, you know. It causes such destruction. Now, of course, Yudhisthira is pointing out, what if the world followed that principle? That we give up the virtue of forgiveness and, you know, being humble and controlling our anger. You know, how would superiors treat their subordinates? You know, just like, you know, children. You know, the parents see the children has made some mistake and they just vent their anger. You know, every time they see some fault or something not done properly, or you know, they just become angry and unforgiving. How would that be? Of course, we see that now in Kali Yuga. That people are so unforgiving that, you know, they blame the child from its very conception. And therefore we have abortion. You know, this child is the cause of me losing sense gratification, therefore kill it. So, know what to speak. In the future, in Kali Yuga, this principle becomes so rampant that children are actually seen as food. You know, it's just you know, everyone just has a vision of sense gratification. There's certainly no forgiveness and protection. It's just, you know, they will eat their children. There's how you know, far, you know, that is the progression of anger and loss of virtue. People become absolutely shameless. And how would subordinates treat their superiors? That as soon as, you know, a superior says, oh, you know, you're doing this for sense gratification, which is not good for your benefit or others, you should stop that. And the you know, subordinates who are following the examples of their superiors, who are lacking forgiveness, and they also become unforgiving, and they become angry and aggressive. You know, how dare you? You know, so therefore we see that, you know, these days there's no respect. That, you know, children, you know, from early age, you know, they're attacking their parents these days. As soon as there's some slight provocation, some children. You know, just daily, their business is to, you know, attack the parents, you know, for no reason. And you know, we see that you know, there is no respect for brahmanas, priests, parents. You know, women no longer respect their husbands. It's described in Kali Yuga that even if one's husband is, you know, most qualified, you know, and of a princely, you know, character and situation, the women will still, you know, disrespect them. It's just, you know, the very name. So Yudhisthira is explaining, you want me to follow this path of giving up virtue. He said, there's no need for me to give up virtue, because Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, if they don't return the kingdom, which they've gotten by, you know, ill-gotten means, they'll be ruined by their own sinful activities. Why should I be the cause of their destruction? Their own sinful activities. And why should I give up virtue, which is not good for me, or as an example for anyone else? And what is the need when they're already will be ruined by their own sinful activities? So you're asking me to be angry, but what is it gain on any account? So then Draupadi, of course, she had a doubt. Well, you know, you're saying that one who is virtuous, that they become successful and victorious, and those who are sinful become, you know, they suffer the results and become failures in all endeavours. But where do we see that? You know, you're the personification of virtue, and you're here suffering, and we're all suffering with you. And those who are sinful, they're flourishing. So you're asking me to accept this principle. I don't see it anywhere. And she said, of course, therefore, you know, the conclusion would be that the result of destiny, according to your pious activities, is that God is punishing you. You're telling me something different, but what I'm seeing is God punishing a pious person. And if you say that, if we say, well, no, God is not the controlling principle, then that means that the one who has the most power and aggression flourishes, and the weaker, you know, lose out. So either way, you know. So of course, Yudhisthira could understand that because Draupadi was so distressed, so grief-stricken, that she was actually speaking words which you know, are atheistic. You know, those words where people speak that, you know, lack faith in God. So, you know, he could understand. Of course, Yudhisthira was very sorry, you know, as he said to her, that to the day he dies, he would never, ever be able to remove the pain from his heart of seeing her and his brothers suffer. It didn't matter so much to him, but, you know, he was actually very disturbed. So in that sense, he wasn't, you know, that peacefulness wasn't there. Nor had he forgotten his Kshatriya duties, because, you know, he was... you know, he knew that one day when the time is right, that he would rise up with his brothers and, you know, do what was right and rule the kingdom, which was rightfully theirs, and, you know, practice virtuous, you know, activities and teach the citizens the same activities. But he said that... you know, we should not practice virtue just to get some immediate result. He says, I'm practicing virtue because it is stated in the Vedas that we should, you know, stated by the sadhus, it is stated by the Lord, and Krishna is stating that, it is stated by the Shastra, and it pleases God, therefore I'm practicing it. I'm not practicing because I'm getting some result, and therefore I'm not disturbed. If you're practicing virtue just because you get some result, and if the result doesn't come, you become angry, and angry at anyone else who's trying to tell you, no, keep on that path of virtue. So, yeah, he explained that, you know, we should just stay here, just as the farmer sows seeds in order to... you know, reap a harvest in the future. We just stay here, we'll perform pious activities, and in the future we'll reap the benefits of that piety. Of course, Bhima also became angry. He came in and joined in with Draupadi. No, you're wrong, Yudhisthira. You know, you've lost, you know, you're acting like you're not a yogi, you're a kshatriya. You know, so he also said that... you know, he was angry. You know, you in, here in the forest like a coward, sulking because you don't have the manliness to get back what you've lost. So yeah, Bhima also, you know, become angry, and then Draupadi said, but you know, still I have further doubts about what you're saying. That okay, let us accept that, you know, destiny. Is the will of God, but what about exertion, one's own endeavours? Everyone knows that if a person doesn't exert themselves in some activity, make some endeavour, they will be ruined, and therefore all the scriptures and all the sages, they condemn inactivity. Inactivity is a sinful, you know, activity. So therefore, you know, Yudhisthira replied that we see that people who give up virtues and do strongly endeavour for some particular results, because of their lack of virtue, because of their endeavour, they actually gain some results. There's some immediate tangible, you know, wealth, success and victory. But because of the impious way that they gained that, it leads to loss of that and ultimately complete ruin. what happens, of course, is that people give way to sense gratification, and anyone who disrupts their gaining that sense gratification, they become angry, unforgiving, you know, proud, disrespectful, you know, those qualities mean that they cannot gain any good character, so they cannot gain good qualities because of those bad qualities, and they become shameless in their activities. And what happens is, because of their bad qualities, and their impious activities, even though they've gained wealth, what happens is Lakshmi leaves them. Lakshmi becomes disgusted and she just leaves. They've gained something, but usually what they've gained, they've gained it simply because that will be their destruction, just like you say. You know, give someone enough rope and they will hang themselves. So someone is thinking, I'm getting so much rope here. You know, I have more and more rope. Yes, and Lakshmi is thinking, yes, now you have enough to hang yourself. That's why I'm supplying. So they become proud, you know, they're so sinful that they get, you know, with some immediate gain from their sinful activities, they become proud and they think, yes, you know, nothing stopped me before and there was nothing will stop me in the future. So they become more and more depraved, more and more, you know, convinced that that path is the path of, you know, success. But what happened? Lakshmi leaves, but Alakshmi comes. Lakshmi is prosperity personified, and Alakshmi is adversity personified. So she arrives. And as a result of the impious activities, so many troubles, so much difficulties begin to manifest. You know, there's all this wealth and opulence and land and, you know, sense gratification, but where are all these problems, you know, coming from? As Alakshmi has come, and with that they become more angry, and with that they become more debased, and gradually they just, when there's, you know, the piety decreases, they become completely ruined like this. So you know, Yudhisthira is saying, yes, exertion is there or endeavor is there, but it must be coupled with virtue. Exertion by itself, lacking virtue, may give some immediate result, but ultimately will cause ruin. So in this way, you know, ultimately, both Bhima, you know, Bhima hung his head in shame, and Draupadi, you know, hung her head. You know, we have, you know, challenged, insulted our dear brother, which is, you know, who is the personification of virtue. He is correct, and because we're angry. You know, Yudhisthira also pointed out that, you know, on the point of exertion, let's, you know, pushed on by anger and, you know, a clouded mind due to that, let's go and attack them now. Now, Yudhisthira, you know, that would be foolish. One, Duryodhana and his party, they now control both their kingdom of Hastinapur and the Pandavas' kingdom of Indraprastha. So they have unlimited wealth, and with that they can amass a huge army that, you know, the Pandavas couldn't amass. And apart from their wealth and the massive army and many, many allies, you know, when Yudhisthira performed the Rajasuya Yajna, they had to defeat so many kings. And now, you know, all these defeated kings who, okay, we'll go along as long as you're emperor, but, you know, as soon as there's a weakness, you know, we want everything back. So they'll all join with Duryodhana. And apart from that, there was Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, Karna, who were known as the best warriors. You know, they were so powerful. And even if you could defeat them, who'd want to kill their grandfather? So, you know, Arjuna was saying, Yudhisthira was saying, you know, just activity alone, you know, without virtue, without intelligence, you know, that is not the, you cannot say that that is the cause of your success. So therefore they accepted that. Now the interesting thing, of course, is what transpired next is that Śrīla Vyāsadeva appeared. So now we actually see the words of Maharaj Yudhisthira coming into play. That he's saying, in time, the results of your virtuous activities will manifest. So Śrīla Vyāsadeva comes along, and he gives Yudhisthira Maharaj this particular mantra, and he says, I want you to teach this to Arjuna because it will allow him to travel great distances in a very short time. And by this he can actually go to the heavenly planets and get the weapons of the demigods that will make you all undefeatable. So Arjuna did that. But of course, who can go to heaven unless they don't have the results of pious activities, the results of virtue. And that's what Srila Vyasadeva said. He said, he is qualified, and give him this mantra, and because he's actually virtuous, he can have access, he can go there. But this was unattainable by Duryodhana and the others because of their lack of piety. And then, of course, after Arjuna left and attained so many weapons from all the great demigods, then a great sage, Lomasa, appeared, and you know, he confirmed all of Yudhisthira's words, and he said to Yudhisthira that I will take you on pilgrimage. So he took Yudhisthira on pilgrimage to all the most holy sites, so that Yudhisthira could actually increase his piety. So Yudhisthira did not gain strength merely by gathering wealth, army and allies through sinful activities. He gained his strength by going to the holy places and performing pious activities with the sadhus. And that actually ultimately, it was Yudhisthira's sticking to piety and virtue which made him and the Pandavas invincible, in which case they were able to win back their kingdom. So therefore, Krishna is saying that the path of sense gratification, don't go there, because it's a stumbling block on the spiritual path. But expect, if he's saying don't give it up even if you're harassed in so many ways, why is he saying that? Because you can guarantee you're going to be. You can guarantee if you give good instruction to someone in Kali Yuga, you're going to, they're going to want to bite you. Especially in Kali Yuga. So, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught that, if you want to chant Hare Krishna and be successful, you must practice tolerance, humility, piousness, respectfulness, like this. And if that is not there, it is not possible to continue chanting. And Lord Krishna is giving the same instruction. So one may say, who is this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? He's giving this instruction. He's Krishna, and he's giving the same instruction 5,000 years ago, and now he's summed it up. Just very few words, because in Kali Yuga we don't have such concentration. Trinadapi sanichana tadodapi sishana manina manadina kirtani asadahari. Be humble, chant Hare Krishna, you'll always be able to chant Hare Krishna and be successful. So this is the secret. I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments. Yep.
Sometimes in our books, we talk about karma with people. They'll say, I am a good person, do good things, but I do good things and not bad to anyone. So what's the understanding?
Yeah, of course, people these days think that. It's a good question. That, if you talk about karma and its reactions and what have you, people generally these days say, well, I'm a good person, I've basically got nothing to worry about, right? I'm looking after my family and stuff like that. It's interesting here because, we were studying Bhakti Vaibhava that one of the principles in ISKCON is that we should, the women should be protected, children, old men, brahmanas and cows. that maintains virtue and individual and social success. So here, Yudhisthira's wife, she may argue, she did, you're supposed to be protecting me. And therefore, for instance, the average man, husband, father, who's supposed to be guiding and protecting his children, wife, family, if they become angry, just like a parent may tell the children, we want you to eat your broccoli, some greens, and like this, and like vegetables. It's not, just, you can't sit there and just eat all the sweets. Now, if the child gets angry, you know, and the parent thinks, oh, you know, I was supposed to be looking after this child, but I've made him angry, you know, so I'll just give him sweets. I want to be a good father, you know, a good mother. So, are they actually protecting their family? Are they actually, you know, doing the right thing for their family and children? So they say, yes, I am, you know, I'm a good person because I'm providing everything for my family. If my wife gets angry, I give her whatever she wants. If my children get angry, I give them whatever they want. But, you know, so what is it that you're giving? You know, you're giving up all the principles of virtue and piety and allowing, you know, those who are literally depending upon your guidance to become involved in simple activities through eating meat, gambling, intoxication, you know, illicit sex, that you're letting them say, yes, these are all normal, and I certainly don't want to make... I will be a good father and provide you a life full of these things. There will always be meat in our fridge. You know, there will always be the opportunity for, you know, the children to have sense gratification and what have you. So they feel, yes, I'm a good man. Or, you know, I'm a good mother. Like this. and drug pity. So, but Yudhisthira was not bewildered by such arguments. His own wife, you know, he was, you know, as a personification of virtue, one of the principles is to protect his wife. But you know, it appeared that he was not doing that, and therefore they were all, you know, ruined and in the forest, and his wife appeared to, you know, have been, you know, totally unprotected. But actually, by Yudhisthira sticking to the path of virtue, that which pleases the Lord, was actually giving the only path of protection to his wife. And any other path is, you know, although there's some immediate result, it's not actually protection, because ultimately it will be vanquished, you know, if there's a lack of virtue. So he was protecting his wife. He was protecting her at the gambling match. One may say, why didn't he protect her? He did protect her by maintaining virtue. Had he given up virtue, then he would no longer be able to protect them. So people say, yes, I am protecting, you know, the women, the children, this, that and the other, and being very virtuous. And how am I doing that? By giving up the principles of virtue. And what is the result? There's some immediate prosperity, and then everything is ruined. And we see the world, everyone, you know, because what happens in the world now, because they've given up virtue, they're like animals. They have that, you know, they think that just by economic development, being a good person, earning well, and what have you, but having no virtue, they will be happy. And what is the result? By giving up virtue, the world's living like, they're like animals with money. You know? All it means is they'll just bark and bite and scratch and kill each other, which they're doing. So, you know, really a person who is a good person is one who protects by being virtuous and teaching virtue, because that is the source of ultimate victory and success. That's right. That's a very good point. That you know, Krishna, you know, wanted Yudhisthira to maintain virtue. He didn't want him to set any other example, that we can only be successful by giving it up. And that also gave the opportunity for Krishna to manifest that nice pastime of protecting Draupadi, which he wanted to do to repay her, of course, for supplying the, you know, the piece of the sari. That's a good point. Thank you. Nice.
Yudhishthira
was just waiting
for the elders to stop the gambling match, because he was just The Yudhishthira Maharaj was just waiting for the elders.
Yes.
They will stop the gambling match because Yudhishthira Maharaj by himself, he knows that it's about nominal activity and that cannot be involved in it.
Yes.
And on the other side, when we see Bali Maharaj, he just rejected the spiritual master because he can understand the spiritual master is not instructing according to the chakras. So the two, one side Yudhishthira Maharaj is carrying on the order of the ordinary the relatives.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side, we see
he's
just rejecting the spiritual master who is much above the relatives.
Yeah.
How can we go
to good question that you know, perhaps Yudhishthira should have rejected those who are spiritual masters or in a superior position because there was some fault. And that was the example given by Bali Maharaj that so of course, you know, some of the differences there is that Bhishma, you know, was actually a great devotee of Krishna. He never ever suggested to Yudhishthira that he should, you know, not serve the Lord. And you know, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, you know, they're actually highly qualified in many ways, and certainly there was fault on their path. Now, the danger is, of course, is that as soon as there's some fault, that we immediately tear down our superiors at the first opportunity. We see that in Kali Yuga, people love to do that, you know. And in Kali Yuga, everyone, you know, everyone is full of fault. You know, everyone has some subordinates under them, and every superior person has some fault. And if we take the first opportunity, let's, you know, pick at their faults and tear them down. Yeah, everyone has some, you know, certainly. And it was quite so. As Yudhishthira said, that, you know, if there is some fault on their behalf, they will be ruined by it. Therefore, there's no need for me to try and ruin them personally and become involved in an unrighteous act in order to do that. You know, he and he was given no indication by any other superior person that he should rise up against his superior authorities. Where is his authority? Where is a higher authority, you know, in one sense, you know, telling Yudhishthira, you know, definitely, clearly, kill them. Kill Bhima, kill Bhishma, Drona, and that right now, reject them. But later, when Krishna clearly said, yes, now you can, then they did. So when, you know, it's not that I'm angry and I see a fault, oh, let's, you know, bring down this superior. That's where, no, don't do that. We should never be subject to anger. And unless there's some clear direction by Krishna and a higher authority, you know, we should be very, very careful. Are we acting because our sense gratification has been disturbed and, you know, we're going to quickly, you know, attack our superiors? Or, you know, is this clearly a definite instruction coming down from Krishna through all the sadhus, backed up by Shastra? There's no way around it. Yes, this guru must now be rejected and even killed. So when that was there, they did it. They killed them. But not just whimsically. And therefore, Krishna is, you know, Krishna has given to Uddhava some instruction. So now he's going to give the story of the Avanti Brahmana who followed the Acharyas in order to achieve success. And you ask, if we ask the question, how come learned men cannot be successful and give up sense gratification and not succumb to you know, opposition by their own mind or others, because they're not following in the footsteps of authorities? Only a devotee who follows in the footsteps of the, you know, previous acharyas, they will be successful, because the spiritual path is so difficult. The spiritual path cannot be seen by anger. The spiritual path cannot be seen by disrespect. The spiritual path cannot be seen by, you know, pride. The spiritual path is seen when one follows in the footsteps of the previous devotees with humility. Then one can see the path. So that, therefore, devotees are successful. So ultimately, they were killed, you know, by Yudhisthira, Arjuna, and everyone, but not just whimsically. Not that, you know, here's the first opportunity. You know, I'm angry. Let's drag them down, kill them. Let's attack them. And that's why he was saying to Draupadi, what sort of world would we have? You know, the first, as soon as we see some fault, let's drag down our superiors. What sort of world would we live in? And the same, as soon as the superiors see some fault in their subordinates, they immediately attack them and victimize them. And what a horrible world. We should be, you know, we should be careful. Any other questions?
Just to add to what Prabhuji asked, I was listening to a lecture by Rajanath Maharaj, and there he says that this whole pastime of Bhishma and all not objecting to what was going on in the court, he says that actually Bhishma is a great Mahajan, and he has agreed to take up that role to glorify the Lord, that even if a Mahajan is on the wrong side, then the Mahajan also will be destroyed if he takes the wrong side.
Yeah.
That was also one more reason.
Yes.
You're playing that role for the Lord.
That's right. Yeah. That's, and that's what we were saying in the beginning. That's a good point. That saying that Bhishma is a, you know, a great devotee of the Lord, and he agreed to the Lord to play that role and be on the other side to show that even a Mahajan, you know, what was the last one? Even a Mahajan
will be
destroyed if they're on the wrong side. Yeah. So. And therefore, we see here that, you know, Sukadeva Goswami describes Krishna as, you know, Shravaniya Virya, one whose pastimes are worthy to hear about, because in his pastimes, you know, with his devotees, everything is, you know, all these principles are nicely displayed. So we should, if we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, hear about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees, hear about Krishna's devotees, will guarantee success on the spiritual path. And if we don't, it's very, very difficult to understand all the principles that are actually being, you know, just in that one pastime, you know, with the Mahabharata, and that's just, we were just talking about just a, you know, a few paragraphs, you know, there's 18,000 verses or something we just discussed today, just, you know, a little section of it. There's so much there. How can, you know, a person who's not following a very expert devotee possibly understand all the instruction, you know, that's being given there? Yeah. But Krishna, there's so much nectar there in the Mahabharata. But if we just casually read through it without taking shelter of devotees and the acharyas, we will be not be able to understand it. And therefore Krishna gives the example of the Avanti Brahmana who did, he was successful because he followed in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. Otherwise the success cannot be there. Yep.
Reactions for different situations. So anything has to be reconciled under the umbrella of human body.
That's right. That's a very good point. That, because there are so many different levels of religious principles being instructed for all levels of people, but if one can't understand the ultimate overriding principle that by which we can understand how to apply everything according to time, place and circumstance, is very difficult. But, and that full view or clear vision of the whole picture means that one has to understand Srimad Bhagavatam and of course Bhagavad Gita. Then we make sense of apparently contradictory. There's no real contradiction, but as you're saying, some religious principles apply to certain people in a certain situation. Other religious principles apply. We were discussing this in Bhakti Vaibhava. That sometimes it's a question of which religious principles are more important. And the sadhus explain that according to time, place and circumstance, one religious principle may be more important than another's. And then in a different time, place and circumstance, a different religious principle becomes more important. So it's very, very hard to, unless one is very expert and understands the ultimate goal, that the ultimate goal is, are you pleasing Krishna? And if you keep that in mind, yes, I'm pleasing Krishna, you'll always know which principle needs to be applied at that time and is the overriding most important thing. But as soon as we lack faith in Krishna and his instructions, then we're lost. And Krishna said that to Arjuna at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, that if you always remember me, you'll overcome all obstacles, otherwise you'll be lost. Any other comments, questions?